I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
My name is Sarah, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Fast. Alongside me, just like every single week, is Jacob Morris, manager Jacob.
Full name today.
Jake Moore. Your Instagram handle doesn't have vowels. Like, what is it? You're missing some letters.
You just tossed out a Jake.
No, because I read it. Your Instagram handle is like Jake. Oh. Moore. But your friends some call people, you Jake, which throws
yeah,
me off.
Yeah, some people do. I think, like, if you knew me before, maybe 2002, you probably still call me Jake, but that's a very small amount of people these days. I prefer Jacob, and I reintroduce myself as Jacob to everyone.
I feel like a lot of your friends, when we were at like your event a few months ago, they asked me like, oh, have you seen Jake yet?
I know. And I was like, that would be like a bunch like, of those people. They're probably the six people who would still refer to me as that were there.
We're all the six people that were there. Anyways, so Jacob Morris.
I'm here.
What we're is it that you're drinking or eating this week?
Okay. Well, Sarah, I was just in Boston, and I'm going to talk about that. Yeah, a little bit more later on today. However, one of the biggest things that I was most excited for going to Boston for the first time, if you follow me on Instagram, this is going to come as no surprise to you that I'm a huge fan of the Boston cream donut.
Yes, you believe it's the superior donut.
Well, I know it's the superior donut. Gotcha. And I'm a huge fan, so I was excited to go to the birthplace of Boston cream pie and Boston cream donuts.
Is that what it comes from?
Boston cream pie, yeah, I believe so.
Oh, that makes sense. The
because,
custard.
And this is how I clued it all together, because I went, I was looking it up. There were a lot of Boston cream pie places. And then when I went to the different bakeries, they had like Boston cream pie, Boston cream donuts, Boston cream cupcakes, Boston cream cannoli. Can you believe that?
Did you have one?
I stuck to the donuts because there were just already so many to try. Yeah. I did a tour of three different ones, three very distinct Boston creams. And I have to say that all of them were very good, but there was one that just like stuck out. And it's tough because I can't even tell you exactly which one it was. It was about a place called Mike's Pastries. And you know what? I walked past like 15 Mike's Pastries. I swear, they're all different. So it's the one over in over near Fenway. I don't remember the
near
the
Fenway
street.
If you want to get Boston cream. How did it rank up against like a Tim Hortons Boston cream?
Ooh, I don't know if I'll be able to go back, honestly. Listen, I love That's Timmy's. Wild. No hate to Timmy's. That's in my life the original Boston cream, but there's something to be said about the original Boston cream that just is in an upper echelon of ratings. So anyway, if you ever get a chance, you're stumbling through Boston, go and get a Boston cream. You can't go wrong.
As someone that doesn't enjoy donuts, I don't think I personally will, but I was waiting for like the Instagram stories. I was waiting for like you to bring us along. I was waiting for like the vlog or something.
Okay, I have a few pieces of content. Maybe I'll throw one up on Instagram. Sarah, what about you? What are you eating or drinking this week?
I've always known in my heart and soul that this is my favorite pizza in the city. And look, I'm not someone that like makes like absolutes about food in Toronto, because I made that one time and like people came at me on the internet because how dare you like judge Toronto food scene or whatever. But I feel like people are very passionate about
sidebar, what was the first absolute?
This was like years ago. This might have been 2021. I made some video like being like some of my favorite bars or restaurants to go to. And
okay, I gotcha.
It was just not it. So I stayed away from food content from that. I was traumatized. But I feel like pizza specifically is like a really touchy subject in the city. I feel like people are very passionate about what they believe.
I've seen the TikTok
best
comments pizza of those like Toronto videos where they interview a chef and they ask them their favorite pizza joint, and it's always contentious.
I've always thought this, but it's just more so confirmed because I just had it again for the first time in a while the other day. North of Brooklyn, my opinion, is the best pizza in Toronto.
Yeah.
It has been. I just love it. It never disappoints. Their garlic dip is amazing. They have a donair sauce. Their garlic knots. Their Caesar salad is good. I feel like the overall experience is so good. And the pizza itself, so freaking yummy. It's like the closest thing I would compare, like when I get like slices in New York.
Yeah.
It feels like the closest, which makes sense because it's called North of Brooklyn. But I just had it on Friday again. And so
yummy. Where is the location that you go to in Toronto?
I order from the Queen Street location.
Okay, yeah.
The one that's near Jaybird.
Is that the original?
I don't know that one or the one in the village. I don't know. But then this one I got, I don't know. It was more north because I was at my friend's on Lansdowne. So this one was by like, the one by Blood Brothers.
That's what I was going to say.
It was great.
It's so good because that location is inside the Greater Good, which is an amazing bar up there on Geary
Ave. I didn't actually go to the Greater Good. Now I want to, but I don't know. North of Brooklyn is the best pizza in the city, in my opinion. Granted, I haven't tried Batty Alley yet, so like maybe like they'll change my opinion, but I don't know. I just think I think it might be a little overrated.
It's a overrated. Good slice.
North of Brooklyn never disappoints. And when you order it, everyone goes, oh, like no one's disappointed that you ordered North of Brooklyn pizza, 100%. Right? Everyone's so happy about
That's a good take. That's a good Toronto take.
Thanks. It's the only one you'll get.
Sarah, what are we watching or reading this week?
I'm sorry that I'm not going to say something new, because really mostly just what I'm watching right now is Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And that shit is crazy. And I've been influencing other people to watch it, which makes me so happy. But I went back to the movies. A movie's so nice. I watched it twice. Anyone but you. So you're welcome, Sydney Sweeney, and your production company, because I'm help lining your pockets because it just surpassed $100 million week. Yeah, at the box office. Which, good granted, it only made like 20 mil in its opening weekend. So it's been like, I think, it's a big like a word of mouth, tail. like slow climb. This also goes to my take. I had said it on when I did my review on TikTok. I think the marketing for this movie, they just like dropped the ball completely. They don't really hit the proper target demos, and they just try to sell it as like two hot people, as opposed to like go to the romance book talk girlies, go to the people that like love to consume that type of content anyways, and like, I don't know, work with them to get the message out. Because even like when I posted the Instagram story reviewing that movie, it was shared like 400 times with people, clearly because people are like, oh, it does sound good, maybe we'll go see it. I think people were just waiting for other people to like test run it almost. So I went back to go see it again with Tara. We had the theater essentially to ourselves. Two people did pop in at the very end, but it felt like a private screening. And I liked it just as much the second time.
Really?
It's going to be one I keep going back to, I think. And not just because I have a crush on Clem Powell, but also I just liked it better.
Is the comedy back? We were talking about this after you, right? Like, I feel like we were talking about that before, but how there aren't a ton of big rom-coms that do super well. And maybe that's why like they didn't put a lot of money into the marketing budget.
Well, this movie it's the highest grossing rom-com since Bridget Jones's Diary in 2016.
Whoa. Okay. Then maybe it is back.
And then Tara made a good point. She goes, everyone keeps saying 2016 is back. 2016 was like everyone's favorite year. A bunch of the trends are coming back. So she's like, maybe that's like a sign that 2016 is back. And that's a great year. So I'm
down for
it.
That's a good omen. That was a great year.
It was a good omen. How about you? What about you? What have you been watching?
Okay. This is almost the exact opposite of a rom-com. There are definitely comedy elements, and has vaguely to do with a relationship, but it's Good Grief, which is Dan Levy's
directorial film. Has he directed other films?
Ooh, I don't know.
He wrote and directed
it. I think he wrote and directed and starred
in
it. Yeah. And I think I liked it.
You did like, I've heard some hot takes. I heard a lot of people didn't like it.
Really? No,
they
I did like it.
It was a snooze.
It wasn't a snooze for me. I did like, first of all, there's really good fashion in it.
Oh, really?
I liked, and good design. However, the one hot take that I will say is that I think that Dan Levy is maybe more talented than Dan Levy thinks he is.
I thought you were going to say than Eugene. I was like, that's a very big take if that's what you're saying.
No, but I think like he could easily be directing, writing a ton of these movies. I think that, yeah, maybe some of the takes are right, that it could be tightened up a little bit just to be maybe more widely marketable.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it a lot. I think it was fun, a little bit funny, also a little bit sad.
But also, like, part of the reason for his success is because he created things that weren't initially widely marketable, and then like Schitt's Creek grew on people. So maybe this film will be like the same.
Which, yeah, it maybe is not to say like it sounds like he's finding his voice, but it was just a cool way to go and see, oh, Dan Levy's out there directing and writing movies now.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, I would add it to your list as a recommended watch. If there's like a nice day you want to cozy up on the couch, throw it on.
For me to cry?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What are we listening to this
week? Okay. I think that I can't remember if it was on last episode or if I just have been shit talking this to other people in life, because I've definitely been doing that over the last, I think it was out for 2 weeks. Ariana Grande dropped her comeback single called
On Your
Yes
Shit Talking.
And,
but you've been listening to it?
Pause.
Okay.
I listened to it immediately as soon as it came out, because I was like, I want Ariana Grande to be back.
Okay.
First time, listened to it, didn't hit. I was like, this is a flop. I texted Haley, who is a massive Ariana Grande fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, this is not a good song. It's a miss from me. Like, I was pretty ruthless about it. Not going to lie, though.
I'm sure Ari took it very personally.
She did. She texted me back and was like, what can I do to fix this song? The answer to do that for that is nothing.
Is to just 300 times?
Listen to it 300 times. I'm not kidding. Like I alluded to again, we're in Boston over the weekend. This was like the go-to morning shower, get ready track, put it on repeat. I'm ready to call it at the end of January here as the song of the summer.
Oh my God,
or
Jacob.
No, if it's not. If Ariana Grande, Yes And is not the song of the summer, she will claim the song of the summer from her album. A guarantee.
I'm not someone that, even if I don't like it initially, like if I listen to it a million times, it won't, like, I didn't love it, and so I just haven't listened
to
it.
Have you listened to it again? Listen to it. No, put it on repeat for five times.
I'm not like you. I don't listen to the same song 3,000 times.
See if on that third time you don't start shrugging your shoulders a little bit. Maybe you start a little sway. I don't know.
I saw a tweet that said it sounds like something you would hear in like the change room of an H&M.
Okay, I thought so too, but then...
It grew on you.
Listen,
Martin's an incredible producer.
You're in improv classes now.
I know,
you would think that Yes And would be your favorite song.
That was a joke that I kept seeing circulating on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. But I just
give it another shot.
Okay, I'll give it another shot. I do believe she has the ability to have a song of the summer off her new album, Eternal Sunshine, that's coming out. But this song, just it didn't do it for me.
I would love to see Ariana Grande and Tate McRae co-headline a tour. Someone clip that and we'll
in case you predict the future from it.
What about you, Sarah? What are you listening to this week?
So I feel like this has been a thing on Spotify for a long time, but it feels like the internet just discovered it this week. Everyone's been sharing their day list.
Oh yeah.
On Spotify, and it's so chaotic. Like what it's like cozy country.
Okay, wait,
Thursday
open yours,
afternoon.
Tell us what it is right now. Should we both do this?
Yeah, see what our daylist
because
is right now.
Daylist is the new playlist that kind of like gives you a completely...
Yeah, for those of you that don't have Spotify, don't know, if you look up daylist and you just click on the like playlist, it makes you a playlist based off your listening habits based on the day and time it is.
And it like titles it.
So this one is Sentimental Alt-Z Monday Afternoon.
My daylist is Flannel Girl Dinner Monday Evening. I saw people sharing these as if they were better than like astrology.
Yeah. Yeah. People were, yeah, that they, you can tell more about somebody based off. Yeah, they're like, I don't care about your astrology signs. Show me your daylist.
Oh, that's
so
fun.
I've been listening to the daylist because it's also just good for, you know, me to branch out and listen to new music other than just the same.
So has it been giving you stuff that you haven't been listening to before?
Yeah, it's like... just, it fuels it with like other artists that are similar to what you already listening to, like stuff that you are probably going to like.
Do we have any new gems?
Again, I don't look though. Like it just plays in my head and I absorb it. And I don't know who's singing it. Gracie Abrams, there's a few of those on there. But yeah, I just absorb it and I don't look at who's singing it or what the title of the song is.
Did you listen to the Noah Kahan Sam Fender drop?
Of course I did. So good.
That is a good song, too.
That collab is so good. Ugh. Anything Noah Kahan does is incredible.
Sarah, somewhere you went this week.
I am just Miss Toronto today, shouting out all the Toronto businesses. So I apologize deeply if you were not from this city and you listened to this podcast. I went to Outer Lair, which is my favorite store in the city to buy silly goofy cards and gifts.
Oh.
So it was my friend's birthday and I went and got him a card. I got him a really good card there last year, too. Like one with... like the Tragically Hip, whatever. They have like very like good cultural reference cards. Like
yeah.
Not just Canadian. They had like Ken and Barbie ones. They had Dan Levy on a card. Like they have like Schitt's Creek, like all these different pop culture shows in card form for like everything, for like birthdays, weddings. Anytime I need to buy a card, I go there because also the cards are only like $6 or $7 compared to like Shoppers. They're like $13.
Yeah, for a card. The $13 cards. I was gonna say that's insane. Wild.
So they're actually really inexpensive and they're better and they're like local artists that they like.
Okay, I like get. That. So,
yeah,
it's like amazing. You're not gonna find it in every single city in Canada.
Exactly. So I love buying cards from Outer Lair and there's nothing better than when you get someone a really good card and they like keep it and like put it on their like little shelf or something. So, anyways, cards at Outer Lair, amazing. And then also. Just like little gifts. Like I got him like this keychain that says like Parkdale, like property of Parkdale on Ooh. It. Like just like really cute personalized.
Where is the store?
Gifts. The corner of Queen of Portland.
Okay.
Across the street from Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
So, I highly recommend going to Outer Lair. They also do online. You can order online as well, but they have really like unique gifts. They have like a Harry Styles coloring book. They have like, it's like Etsy personified as a store. Like if Etsy was just... a store.
I like that when you can do a gift for like say it's a housewarming or a birthday or something that where you don't want to get someone a huge gift but you want to give them something with a little bit like, more personality.
I was equating it to like instead of buying like a bottle of wine that's $20 I just was able to get him that and then like little record player coasters that like was the equivalent to it. Totally. And then that's like more personal. So yeah. Outer Lair shout out. But that's somewhere I went. What about you?
Amazing. Okay, well I've alluded to it in two of the first answers here in this episode, but I went to Boston.
Did you just listen to like Noah Kahan the entire time while you were there?
That's I what did. I was listening to on the plane Paul Revere.
As I should. I feel like that's like a rite of passage if you're landing.
Boston. Wow. Obviously, if you know any bit of American history, you know Boston's a pretty significant place. But even when you go in there, they've preserved all that, which is great. But it's I was saying earlier, it's so nice. It's like a modern. Relatively large city, but it feels kind of like a smallish town because you can walk around everywhere. Yeah. There's a lot to do and see from like arts to restaurants to sports to history, all sorts of stuff. I was there for an extended weekend.
Love that. It was
a good time. I would go back.
I only went once for work, but the one thing I did love about it is that you could walk everywhere. Like I was staying, I don't know what area I was staying in, but it's like I'd walk over the bridge and go to the arena with my gear. Like it felt like Toronto that way, that you can like a very walkable city, which I appreciated. And I guess like the history is like embedded within the city, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, well, I alluded to it earlier, obviously Boston creams are there. So what there. More reason do you need to travel?
You also said off camera to me that it was some of the nicest people.
Yes,
which I think would surprise people because I hear Boston and I think angry Boston Bruins.
Well, especially
fans.
Like I was going to a Boston Bruins game
so
and you think
like
oh,
to get punched in the face or
something. You know, being from Toronto, being a Leafs fan, I was like, we gotta keep that down a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, everyone was super nice. The guy beside me kept high-fiving me even though I wasn't wearing a jersey. It was a good time.
I also
mentioned you, I think, Sarah, have to go just specifically for Beacon Hill Books and Cafe.
It sounds magical.
If anyone is into books and has any reason to go to Boston, you have to go and check that out. It was probably the nicest bookstore that I've ever been in.
He literally said you would move there after seeing this bookstore.
It would be dangerous for you to go to that store because, you might live in Boston from
then
on.
That's so funny. And last but not least, something that you did this week.
Okay. I guess all my answers are kind of tying into Boston because I was traveling and I was doing this one. I think I even talked about it a little bit on a previous episode, but this is one thing that I do, and I did it in Boston, was I did my travel playlist, and I would recommend this to anyone who travels, and maybe you just want to save a song to throw on like your Instagram photo
thing.
Post or something like that, or you just want to like, I'm someone who ties music in the space around me to memories like so closely. And if you hear a song playing, you're like, oh, I remember when I was in this bar, or I was at that museum or this and that. So I do travel playlists. And when I do like, oftentimes I'll just be jumping on Shazam a track, and then immediately add it to a travel playlist, which is like, so that. Boston, now I have like 10 or whatever songs that were playing in different parts of the city. Was it a little diner, or maybe it was like at the game or something like that.
As you're traveling, not like making a free travel playlist about the vibes of the city.
No, they're actually songs that you like. So like a song in a restaurant, someone else has curated that playlist to fit the vibe of the place. Maybe it's new music that you've never heard. Cool. There were a couple songs, a couple artists that I didn't like, I'd never really listened to before, that I tossed in there. It's a good way to discover new music, but then also like keep kind of a scrapbook of memories from your travels by like tossing it all onto different travel playlists.
Oh, that's
cool. So I'd recommend doing that.
I like that.
Sarah, something that you did this week.
So something I did was my first sober week of 2024.
Okay, so how'd it go?
I had talked in, I guess it was our goals and everything, that instead of like dry January or dry February or any of those things, I will be doing one intentionally sober week every single month, because obviously there will be unintentional sober weeks where it is like I just happen to not drink, but I wanted to set intentional weeks, because then at the end of the year there'll be 3 full months of sobriety.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah, and I'm just doing it I don't know, to just like maybe pay a little bit more attention to my relationship with alcohol. I think it's so easy, especially like at PR events or whatever, to just like feel like I need a glass of wine or something, because someone's offering it. Also get a little bit more creative with the way that I like spend time with people, like I don't know. So it's, and 1 week is like nothing. It's like no time at all. So intentional. I did like Saturday to Saturday. It was good.
Did you notice a difference or anything? You were like, oh, I have this event. Maybe I would, it's going to be weird.
Also because I'm intentionally picking the week, I can intentionally pick it on ones that maybe aren't as busy. I mean, every week for me is busy, but when like Julia and I were making dinner together, she was like, oh, do you want me to crack a bottle of wine? And I was like, oh no, like it's my sober week, like that. Whereas normally I'd be like, hell yeah, crack the bottle of wine.
It's also nice to have that intention then to like break the stigma around that conversation.
For sure.
Cause it's not like you're going entirely sober, at least right now. Right. And that's, you're just reframing your relationship with alcohol, like you said, but that makes that conversation a little bit easier. And people like, I feel like it's a little bit in vogue right now to be not,
I know, sobriety is like trendy right now, which is like, that sounds weird.
It's a cool thing to be trendy, though.
Very trendy right now. So it's really interesting. I think it's gonna be really interesting, like as I pick more weeks, especially as like the summertime comes and stuff, when I'm like more like going on patios or the winter, it's kind of easy.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting moving forward, but I'm up for the challenge. It's a good challenge for
myself. Okay, that's nice.
We are back with another monthly voicemail segment. You can submit your questions to us at talkingfastshow@gmail.com. We can also give advice. I also do call us on Instagram. We do call us the Talking Fast Show Instagram. So we want to talk, we want to answer your questions, and we want to give advice. We like when we actually get to like break down topics a little bit. So we do these monthly. So whenever you have a thought or a question and think, I don't know what to do, maybe Sarah and Jacob can help me. But with that, we have a bunch of random questions that have been selected for January voicemail. Jacob, are you ready?
I'm ready.
The first question is, how's 2024 going for both of you so far? Which I thought was such a kind question to ask.
That's like a thoughtful thing to ask.
How's your 2024 going so far?
It's good. People don't ask that question
3 weeks in.
Like 3 weeks in a lot of the time. But I thought it was thoughtful when I saw that as well too. Because I was like, you know what? It's okay. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's not bad.
Because it's not really like the new year anymore. Like
yeah, no one's saying Happy New Year anymore.
But it's like not...
It's like, enough to have like... Did you start your goals?
Yeah.
Did you start on them?
That's true. That's true. Or have you already fallen off them?
I know. It's going pretty good, I think. I got a trip under my belt, which is always nice travel early on in the year. You feel you're like getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. You're shaking things up. You have plans on the horizon. But now, because I don't have any other travel booked, I feel a little like, oh, well, what's the rest of the year going
to
be?
3 month out theory. You always have to have something to look forward to 3 months out at least.
Yeah, well, maybe it's the cottage for the next one there.
That's true.
The 3 month out.
That's true.
I could be doing a little bit better when it comes to maybe the running aspect of things. I think that that's like maybe next up for me, especially because we have a few races coming up.
Well, we're going to organize some run clubs to get ready for those. And I think that will help both of us, because I can't show up and run for the first time in months at those run clubs. That will
gotta put in a little
bit of work.
But
I'm really good in like the lifting, like I'm going to the gym and like lifting weights and stuff right now. But the running, man, I can't run on a treadmill. First, you run slower And I'm just staring at the same thing the whole time.
And
I'm
like, the outside is so cold right now. Listen,
like it's too cold to run. Like if it's like -5, I can do it.
I've only got one pair of running tights too. So like if I run once, I got to do a load of laundry before I do the next one, which is my excuse right now.
But I'd say mine is like going pretty well. It's like not too high, not too low, which is better than last year. Because last year, my year started off pretty low. And then it was crawling out of that like mental health hole the entire year after. So I have no complaints. I was like talking to my therapist. I'm just very like day-to-day chill, which I'm not as a person normally. So something about this year, I'm just like, overall, I'm feeling like chill in this year and like look good.
That's
and just
a
like
good taking, place to start.
Yeah, it is. It feels like, I feel like I talked a lot about like going slowly into things recently. Normally I go like head on, get obsessed and like whatever.
Okay, well, I like this one with the alcohol one too, because that's like, it's intentional.
It's approachable, right? And it's intentional. And I feel like it's, I'm setting myself up for success that way. I feel like when I go like so the other way, like when it's like I joined F45, I'm like, I'm going to go 4 times a week. Like that's so the opposite way. Whereas now what I just do is I'm going to the gym whenever I feel like I have the time. When I'm working from home, I'll go at lunchtime. I'll go down for like 30 minutes and I'll like look up TikToks and like what to do. And I'm like learning as I do it. Nice. But it's just kind of like, I'm not going with the intent of like following a strict plan. I'm just going to like get into the idea of going. So it's regular. It's like when I started running, I just started running to get used to the idea of running. And then I can set goals if I want them.
Okay. This is the exact same with me. That's a great way to phrase it, because that's what I was talking about, I think, on a previous episode week, about getting back into running and like not trying to immediately like hit a goal or something like that. But like, finding your feet and taking the time to find your feet. I like that. Okay. Second question up here for voicemail. Hobby ideas for girlies in their 20s that can be done in the evenings. Pretty specific.
Yeah, but I think you can answer this because you had girl dinner in your day list.
I think that gives me the right to jump in on this one.
Okay, so I actually, look at me, new woman, if you're watching, I have a notebook. I actually took notes and wrote it.
Those are extensive notes,
too. My writing is horrendous. I realize I don't write anymore, so like my handwriting has just gone to shit. All of those years of learning cursive out the window. So I wrote down a few hobbies. I think one is sports. We've talked about that so many times. It's not only just a great hobby, but it's a great way to meet people. And those can be as serious or as low-key as you want, whether you're a former athlete, whether you're trying a new sport, whether you're, and that could be lessons, that could be like rec sports, something approachable. Like I had never really played volleyball before I played volleyball like with my friends.
You know what? I had a couple of friends even say that doing some of the, I think that there's maybe like a little hate around them because they're like, oh, I'm not joining a league to like go and compete. Mm-hmm. But they're fully like, what do they call them? They're workshops, right? To like specifically learn how to play the new sport.
Oh, there is? Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, even like
drop-ins for it?
Jam. Yeah. We play in a jam soccer league, but like they run clinics. They're called clinics to essentially learn a new sport.
That's cool. So if I want to like learn pickleball, I could go to the clinic.
Exactly.
Like, okay. See, like that's great. So then like that's an approachable way to do it. I also put just classes in general. I feel like now I've talked about it a bit, I want to take more classes. I'm in my class era. I feel like I'm like removed from school enough that it doesn't feel like schoolwork. And it's like, once you're older, you realize, oh, I can just take a class just to take one, not with the intent of like trying to get really good at something or trying to get a job out of it or anything. So like there's cooking classes. There's like even those like paint night things. There's
for sure.
There's like different, I'm doing improv. And then there's so many different classes, especially if you live in a city there, and like different things that you can do that I think that's like a really, it can turn into a hobby. I think that's,
you know,
like
what I would toss in there in terms of classes, but then also maybe something that you could do on your own. There's a like a, obviously a new trend around like old vintage digital cameras, but if you have any interest in photography, like picking up an old film camera, there's a ton that you can learn there, and it can be approachable for like other things that you might be interested in. I remember when I picked up my first film camera, I was shooting a lot of music. So like if I was going to a concert, I would just take a camera.
Oh, that's cool.
And you know, then you try to apply a couple of things you learned, and then maybe you have a cooler Instagram dump afterward with some proceeds of your new hobby.
I was trying to also think like what's defined as a hobby. Like, is reading a hobby? I guess kind of.
I think so.
Like,
yeah,
I guess reading's a hobby. So like that's an approachable one. Like just when it comes to that, just read things that you actually want to read. Don't feel like the pressure to read something that's maybe like, I feel like with school and going to university, especially you're being forced to read so often that's what turns people off from reading. I mean, I went through an era where bracelet making was literally my hobby just because it was like a nice little craft to do and it like calmed my anxiety. So I think there's like different ways you make things hobby. Or if you're someone that's like, oh, I just love watching TV and movies, you can almost like make it a hobby by downloading like Letterboxd and like deciding to like leave reviews, and like that's how it becomes your hobby. Just like, you're not doing it because you want to become a professional movie critic, but like you can just leave reviews and maybe that's your hobby, and so then you can share it with friends or something.
Okay,
like
that's a great idea. Yeah. Oh, Haley and I have been using this app called Belly, which is basically the Letterboxd
for restaurants.
That's cool. And it's like, it's fun to like, you can toss in photos of your own experiences. I know it's like maybe not super approachable because you have to be like, you're rating a restaurant, you have to go and do the restaurant, but it's a similar thing. You could do that with recipes. I'm sure, I don't know names off the top of my head, but like, I know that you're in your learning how to cook journey as well. That's a big one. Trying new recipes, doing it with friends. Great way to do that.
Yeah. Like it doesn't, like a hobby doesn't have to be like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be so like, for me, like it could be something you're already doing, but like maybe just like doing a little bit more often or taking a little bit more seriously. Like for me, like playing guitar is a hobby that I have.
Maybe I'll pick that up. I've never played guitar in my life.
Take some lessons.
Actually love to learn how to play the piano. That's something that's like a goal for the next 5 years. I don't know when, how realistically could do that.
I feel like you could. I mean, like I feel like basics of piano you can learn, but
I have absolutely no basics at all. I know nothing.
I feel like guitar is good. And a lot of people, I feel like, learn to play guitar when they're older because they just want to like pull it out around a campfire. I was going to say like if you at your cottage, you're going to be able to pull it out, but I think those are all some good recommendations, but I just think like, think of what you already like to do and don't like force. I feel like hobbies come naturally. Like I feel like forcing a hobby onto yourself and is like don't really stressful.
Don't feel so much pressure to sign up for like 10 classes of this like cooking class or something. Try a ton of different
stuff
and see what sticks.
That's why a lot of things have drop-ins. Like even improv had a drop-in session that you could pay $20. You get like the 3-hour session for the first one. And then that way it can be like, oh, this is so not for me. Or, oh, this is great. Then you sign up for like the weekly classes or something
For sure.
Okay, I found this question so interesting. Jacob, you're older and wiser than me. If you could be any age for the rest of your life, what would it be? Like you get to stay at that age at like what you look like, who you are at that age.
Okay, yeah, this there are a few caveats for this question, I think. Because it's
have
like
questions like what?
Well, no, I feel like this question is a little bit, is it mostly based on physicality? Like you
No,
want...
I think it's Well, yeah, I think it's mostly based. But not even just physicality. I mean, like physicality could also mean like fitness and stuff as
That's
well.
What I mean. I think that if I could stay an age, and I don't know like when that would be, but like my prime for running probably, because I know it'll be a sad day when like I just can't move when I like how I used to be able to.
Put a number. Like, what? Like, would you say the age you are right now forever?
Maybe. I feel pretty good right now.
And that's it.
But I'm also not opposed, and maybe this is a take that a lot of people don't agree with, but like I find aging cool. Like I am excited to just age and become like a 9-year-old
but
90 man.
Like it's just the question. Like
let's
like,
say the age I am now, which is what, 26?
29.
What about you? What do you like? How would you approach?
I haven't
the
approached this age yet, but I think 30.
Yeah.
I think 30 is the perfect age to stay forever. Because if I could say I'm 30 forever, you're seen as an adult. You're seen as old enough to be like professional settings and respected enough in it. You still look young, where you could be getting ID'd still.
Yeah.
You have your health. And I don't know. I think that I'm not 30 yet. I'm hoping 30-year-old me is fantastic.
30s are
but
good.
But I think 30 is like, I also have your shit together a bit more. Like, I just think 30 is the age that I would, like, I was always, when I was growing up, I was so excited to like, be my like late 20s and like early 30s. I feel like that's like when you're like peaking in life a bit. Yeah. So I'd like to stay at that peak and then never move from it.
Okay, that's a good one actually, because the 30s have been pretty good.
Well, I think about it. When like a celebrity dies and then they post a photo being like, this person died, most of the time it's from like their 30s that they post the photo because they still look like an adult. They don't look like a teenager.
Am I in my death photo era then? Is that what you're telling me?
Maybe. I think about that sometimes though, how it's like, how much
I gotta take some like good headshot. I gotta like be more particular about how I'm looking at this camera right now.
They just take a screenshot from the podcast. You're now in the future. By then it'll be the future and it'll be like holograms.
Oh, weird. Okay, yeah, we gotta start shooting this in 3D.
It'll be this clip playing over and over again.
Whoa, that's a little bit too existential for me right now. Sarah, what is one bucket list concert you haven't been to yet?
Okay, crazy Meant to Be universe. Avril Lavigne is the only artist that I've never seen live that's like a bucket list concert for me. I mean, like Adele's on there too, but like high up.
Did she announce
and
tour?
She announced tour today?
No way.
Yeah, she did. And it's not during the Olympics, so that was another important factor. And yeah, so I'm going to buy tickets.
Huge.
Avril Lavigne was the very first CD I ever purchased when I was in grade two. And then I was telling everybody here a couple weeks ago, I then proceeded to wear a tie to school around my neck because she wears a tie around her neck. And all my school photos and everything. And then it was the first music video I ever purchased. We used to buy music videos on DVD.
Yeah.
And I would watch the complicated music video on DVD.
This is every maybe, what day. Time? What time of year is it? The concert here in
August,
Toronto?
August, a Bud Stage. Peak. Avril Lavigne, a Bud Stage. Are you kidding?
I'm shouting out. This is maybe a talking.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fast little school trip then.
I'd love to. Oh my God, wait, we actually have to because of
I know.
We have to. That's going to be a school trip.
We're going
to
go and see who knows more lyrics.
Because it's her greatest hits tour.
Oh.
It's her greatest hits tour.
That's amazing.
And Izzy, if you don't know all the words to every single song.
I'm going
to
break out my like studded belt.
Studded belt, ties, dark eyeliner. Oh my God, this is like my Warp tour. Like that's what it's gonna be.
Oh, okay, that's amazing. Did they announce who's supporting?
Simple Plan.
No way.
Incredible.
Okay.
Okay, no, we all have to go.
We have to go.
We have to wear the studded belts. We have to do it. Okay, I'll buy us all tickets. I'll buy us all tickets. It'll be for content. We can mic ourselves up.
Yes. Okay, anyway, I'm going to do this. Can we have her on the podcast too, Avril?
Avril?
You're listening? I mean, I know you're listening.
I don't
come on
think
the
I could interview Avril. I think I'd be like freaking out too much. She's like Hillary Duff at that level. Anyways, dream concert, and it got announced today. So I feel like that's a manifestation happening. Meant to be.
No way. Okay, that is actually so funny though, because I was talking about my dream concert yesterday.
Oh, and it's Simple Plan right now.
Yeah. No, I was talking about, we were talking about the Sphere in Las Vegas, this big crazy concert venue. It's not U2, don't worry. And it's not Miley Cyrus, who's been rumored as the next, heir to the Sphere. I've never seen Coldplay.
Oh, I've never
I'm
seen Coldplay
big
either.
Big Coldplay fan. And that's like, I know Coldplay gets a little bit of hate, but like,
well, they were all like hippy dippy, like eco-friendly. They only toured the West Coast to like,
and they have like
make
bikes
their
on
carbon
there.
Emissions,
you can
like
power some of their lights. Yeah,
yeah.
I would love to see Coldplay, and I would love to see Coldplay in the Sphere because they have like big visual shows. I'm sure
cool.
that they would do something really, really cool.
That
it's
would be
it's
cool.
highly unlikely they in this
we'll play
life
the sphere.
Would do it as it is probably. It probably takes
know.
More power to power the Sphere. Than anything else, they would have
oh,
to change
true,
out
actually.
All. They'd have to change out all of the seats in that place to yeah. bicycles,
or they'd have to like have no morals or ethics
yeah.
anymore.
Chris Martin would have to like have a very big life change for that to happen. But I think that, or in another venue, would be my dream concert.
I love that. We're shifting gears a little bit. This is the chaos of voicemail. I mean, you never know which voicemail you're going to click through next
yeah.
on your phone. You know what I mean? So this one asks us, how do you move past the loneliness that can come with being in your mid-20s?
Ooh, okay. I have a theory on loneliness in the 20s, and I think it kind of is spawned a lot of the time by FOMO being
the
very
core
prevalent.
Root of it, 100%.
Yeah,
I agree.
Where it's like there are a lot of people. I knew when I was in my 20s, there were a lot of people that I was kind of acquaintances with, or people that I was close friends with would be out doing something with other people that I wasn't really friends with. And sometimes you feel like you're missing out and you're excluded and whatnot. Nowadays, I'm like,
you're like, don't invite me.
Don't invite me. I'm only going to go and do things that I want to do.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. And I feel like you, the later you get in life, not that I'm late in life, but as you like get older is what I mean. You start to realize, like, listen, you don't need a million friends. You can just, like, focus on your core group of people. who are going to be there for you for the rest of your life, probably.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, find what is fun. But FOMO was it for me in the 20s.
I think you've hit a nail on the head. I think FOMO is the root of most of people's problems in their 20s. And it's not just FOMO for, like, people going out to the bar, like, you know, getting invited to this party or this cottage weekend or whatever. I think the FOMO can also be like that right after university gap, right? Where your entire life, your 20s are weird, right? Because your entire life you've been in school where from an outside perspective, everyone's pretty even. Like you can't, like you're all the same, you're all in the same grade. You're all kind of having roughly the same opportunities. Like obviously like there's differences in money, income, like skin color, where you're from, whatever, but it's mostly a perceived even playing field. And then you go to university or college, it's the same thing. You're still like in school, you're still in a structure, you're still like in a system that is set up in place for you. And then literally you throw that cap in the air and then one day they're like, all right, bye.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, oh, so I'm like a full adult now. They're like, yep, you don't have any structure, we're not go apply for jobs, figure out what a job is, and you have to learn corporate life, or like you have to figure it all out.
And that structure sometimes in school, if you're with your peers, you're all trying to achieve the like same grades with the same set of rules, the same rubrics that you're trying to adhere to. And then your rubrics are wildly different for the rest of your life.
Exactly. There is no, it's so cheesy, but it's like, there's no rubric for life. You know, people say shit like that, it's true. And then, so then you're just left there being like, what the heck? So even if you do everything properly, like I thought I did everything properly, I got a job right at school, and then on like a Wednesday in December I pack up my box and I'm standing on the corner of the street laid off from like a job I thought I'd be at forever, you're like, wait a second, like this is like what happened, like it's not like
that lack of structure, can be very lonely.
The lack of structure is what makes people feel lonely, because you look at other people, obviously like social media and everything is the highlights and everything, but I think the lack of structure is what really people struggle with, and I don't think they realize that's necessarily what the root of the problem is. And then from there you're comparing yourself to everybody else, like even like I have like friends that like were in law school and then they like, I feel so behind, all my friends have jobs, but like we on the other side are looking at you being like, you're in law school, like we feel like you're ahead of us. It's like this weird like perception of everyone's timelines being different, because for your entire life everyone's been on the same timeline.
Yeah.
And then one day when you're 22 it's like all blown
up. Do you find your conversations with friends with say like early 20s to now have changed
in
the sense of like, what I find too is early 20s, mid 20s, the conversations we would have is like, it was always looking forward and what we're going to get to and like what we're trying to achieve and all this. But then it kind of mimicked that kind of highlight reel of social media in a sense, because you weren't really understanding if someone else was struggling with something, you didn't maybe want to feel vulnerable to share that with other people because you don't want to get left behind. But now that's a lot of what I talk about with my friends. It's just like, oh, going through another tough period.
No, 100%. I also think granted, like the era of just talking about mental health and all of that has changed
that's
a lot.
True,
and I think
too.
That's also really shifted. I don't think like even like 5 years ago it would have been the same. But yeah, it's really interesting. All of my like best friends are my best friends from university. So we actually all went to school for a very specific program.
Right.
Right? Like very specific, like sport media. And then we all like graduated. So, and we all got jobs and whatever. So it was very weird for the first couple of years after, because it still felt like we were in school kind of. And then now I think it's nice that people have branched off into other careers or other like areas. And it's nice because then we just talk about like different stuff. I feel like before it was like such a bubble that we were in, which also can cause loneliness, I think, when you're in this bubble and you feel like you're the only people experiencing like this one thing.
But and it's almost like you want, for a while, what I wanted was like, oh, we're, especially in high school and then in and just out of university, it felt for a while like my friends and I, we were all kind of like going toward the same thing.
But then you realize that you're not.
You're not, and you're going in different directions. And all of a sudden it's just like, oh, this person that used to be my friend contextually as like the person I would go to the bar with every, you know, weekend or whatnot, is now the person who lives in the suburbs and has a kid and has a completely different life. But that's totally cool too. That makes your life a lot richer, I think.
Yeah, I just think that like, I feel like loneliness is a feeling that as humans will feel throughout our lives in different stages for different reasons. Like maybe in your 20s it's the FOMO, it's the uncertainty, it's the lack of structure. But then maybe in your 30s it's the people are getting married or having kids. Like I think it's like the loneliness sometimes comes through like different like stages of your life. But I just think it's a matter of like understanding what it's rooted in and where it's coming from. And that makes you a more confident person in understanding how to like go through it. Like, because we all feel lonely once in a while. Like it happens to literally every single human. So I think it's just a matter of knowing how to set yourself up for success and combat it a bit.
Yeah, for sure. This question kind of is a little tag on to that one, but it's more seasonal related. How do you shake off the winter blues?
Oh, you mean like living in Toronto where we didn't have sunshine for 30 days?
Yeah, exactly.
We had sunshine twice in the past week and I'm like, oh my God, I'm a new woman.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I just like, I kind of lean into it when it's the winter blues. I'm not afraid to lean into like the winter blues as long as I'm not like rotting in my bed for like a week, but I'm not afraid to be like, even Friday night as example, it was freaking cold outside. Like it was like minus 20. It was just like, I don't know. I had like a long week. I was exhausted, feeling a little down on myself, just like not even down, just like tired and just like groggy. And I just allowed myself to fully lean into it and just like stayed at home, made my life easy. When I'm like trying to battle like winter blues or just like any sort of like seasonal depression or just like mental health stuff, regardless, I just try to make everything as easy for my brain as possible because I don't want mental load. I don't want mental stimulation. I just want to be able to like, so I'll, even though I had like planned to like make myself dinner and do all this, I just ordered food because I'm like, well, that's one less thing I have to think about. And then I just turn on actually usually a movie that I've already seen before because I'm like, one less thing I have to think about. I know I like this. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to do. Or just like setting myself up just to be able to just like sit with it for a little bit, I think is the best way.
That's kind of where I'm at too. I really dislike the winter, especially. I can deal with the cold. Mm-hmm. I can't deal with the gray.
And no, the like, gray no is what's sun. Tough.
That's what honestly feels like. Because cold,
you can
like
bundle up, but
me.
There's nothing you can do about the gray.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just nothing nicer than breaking up my day and like going out to the dog park with Brooklyn and getting out to walk around in the sunshine for an hour. But if it doesn't exist for 3-4 weeks,
mm-hmm. and it's getting dark early, like it's.
I know, but then I saw, and I'll try to find that. I'm not going to remember nearly anything word for word, but it was this TikTok and I reposted it and it was all about, it was like this really well-spoken person. It was just like a man on the street interview, but they were talking about how important the like periods of darkness and like sadness are sometimes because that also makes those more happy, sunny times a lot more enriching.
Well, it's what like people say about when you live in a climate that doesn't change, like the climate doesn't change. Like, so when people like live in Los Angeles or something where it's sunny all the time, you don't necessarily like appreciate like the sunny days as much. Whereas I feel like living here, I feel like one consensus of living in Toronto is everyone loves a Toronto summer. Toronto summer is like the unmatched. Best ever. It's unmatched.
Talking about 2016 as well. If we're heading for another 2016 style Toronto summer.
Crazy. But what's, I think the reason we all, as people that live here, appreciate the summer so much, it goes the same one, like I'd say in Canada in general, is because we've suffered through the like gray doom and gloom to then appreciate the sunshshine so much more.
There's like nothing it's like you see the first little flower, a little bird coming through.
I experienced it in London 2 years ago when I landed. It was like the first sunny day they had in like 2 months, and everyone's like out in parks riding their bikes, like just sitting in the park and like just like soaking it in. And there's some magic in that. So I really remind myself of that during these blue days, like a really doom and gloom, that the sun will shine again.
Well, if that's not a cheesy metaphor for life, right? You said you earlier, you're picking up the nice kind of cards at that card store. I think right now we're writing the cheesy like Hallmark ones.
Our next voicemail question, we've got advice for traveling with a partner for the first time. But I think we can like open this up to traveling with anybody new for the first time.
Yeah. It's ruined friendships, hasn't it? Not for me personally. I just said that.
No, but it does ruin friendships. Or it doesn't necessarily ruin friendships for me. It just makes me very aware of I would never travel with that person again.
Yeah.
It's definitely done that. But it's no easy. I feel like when you're younger, you think like, oh my God, traveling with like friends and like this and that. It's so you really learn somebody, like learn about.
Well, okay. Yes.
When
the first piece of
them.
Advice I would say is do it. Just say yes to going and do it. Cause you will learn about that person. And if, especially if it's a partner, if you don't travel well together, no, like write done. It off, like, what break are you gonna up.
Do? I remember I used to like, it was like this like wise tale of like, oh, like when you travel with someone for the first time, that's when you really know them. And like, yeah. I'm not talking like a weekend trip. Like I'm talking like 10 days or maybe even a week. I'll give you a week to 10 days. Weekend trips I have learned on
enough
weekend trips.
Where like you need to do some laundry maybe or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
I just mean like maybe with a partner you can get through a weekend regardless, but I'm thinking like you need like something where you're out of your comfort zone. So like 7 days, 10 days, whatever. And I don't really know if there's any advice. Just like make sure you're like when you're traveling with anyone for the first time, make sure you're on the same page about expectations. Mm-hmm. As the number one thing, because like what you might expect out of a trip might be different than somebody else.
That's like activities, the money you're spending,
all the expectations of the trip. You need to lay it out, like just lay it out there, because otherwise it gets so awkward on the trip. And I've had this happen so many times when it's like people had different expectations, or there's tension, or like people like had different ideas of what a trip was going to be, or were promised different things, or la la la.
Yeah.
It just makes it not fun, because then you're like, why am I spending money here if I'm like not even having fun? Like there's so many layers to it. And that goes for the partner or friends. So just like make sure you're honest, because if you're willing to travel with somebody, that means you're close enough that you should be able to have a conversation about like,
okay, that's where my next piece comes in. And it is right off of yours, because it's like tension. If there is tension, have that conversation.
Have it immediately.
Don't, if you're especially if you're a group of friends, say, and there's like six plus of you or something, mm-hmm. and you can break off into a little couple different tangents or factions, the last thing you want to do on any trip like that is to basically have it become a game of Survivor, where there are tribes and alliances and like someone's gonna double cross because they both want to do activities but don't want to spend a lot of money. It's like, it's way better to have that tough conversation that's gonna take you like 10-20 minutes, talk through things. And then maybe you get to the end of the conversation, you hate the person still, and you don't want to travel with them, but like at least you tried.
My favorite thing though that happens on a trip is like you figure out people's roles. Like people fall into like their roles, and it goes into being in a couple too. Like I'm very much the early planner for a trip. Like I'll plan out like the hotel, logistics, like how we're getting there, whatever. But then once I'm on the actual trip, because I've already done all the thinking of how I'm getting places and where I'm sleeping, the rest of it I'm pretty like whatever about. Mm-hmm. I'm down just to like wander about. Whereas like Nolan, as an example, is the person that like wants to plan the days and like pick the museums or that type of stuff. So it balances out well.
Yeah.
But so fun seeing the roles that people fall into when you're
there's also like I noticed
together.
There's also the there's like the decisive one, which you
need,
maybe
you need it.
Maybe the they most, even if they're not the same person as the original planner, and this is this can be like in a big friends group, it could be two friends traveling, it could be partners traveling, but like if one of you is not decisive, go home immediately. Like you could have 15 weeks left. Yeah. Go home. Because if you don't have the friend who's like, oh, there are three restaurants here in front of us, which one should we go to? They all have pluses. And you could debate things forever.
Everyone would be like, oh, I like it actually bothers me more because I am the decisive one. It bothers me more when people are just like, oh, I don't know, I don't care. And it's like, okay, but
it's like,
I need you to care a little bit. Like I know you can, like you're trying to be easy and I respect it, but it's like, I need you to care like 5%. So it's just a matter of like, and people surprise you. Some people you don't think you'd travel well with, you end up traveling great with.
For
like,
sure.
It's just like, I think you just got to do it and just be open and honest and have conversations, because it's got money on the line. There's like all these things that you don't want to leave it disappointed or like not friends with the persons. And I think you avoid that if you just talk about it.
Yeah. There are some good roles in there. The other role that I'll toss out there is the transportation person, the person who always has the Uber booked, or the person who like can figure out how to actually get somewhere on transit.
Mm-hmm. Big role. Big
Find
role.
Your roles. And
Find
lean
your
into
roles.
Them.
Lean into them and be decisive.
Okay, another one. Speaking of how to be decisive, the voicemail question we have in front of us now is how to not doubt yourself. How do you become that decisive person on the trip?
That's like such a big pie in the sky question.
It
like, how to not doubt myself. Like, I'm going to do what you did earlier. Not doubt myself in what context? In work, in life, in everything. First of all, you're always going to doubt yourself sometimes. That's like even the most confident people. I don't know. I feel like the lack of doubt just comes with experience.
I was going to say, you have to make mistakes. You have to make 100%. Mistakes and realize that mistakes are not the end of the world. Just get up and like try to make a new decision.
Yeah. And like even like in a work context for me, it's like the lack of doubt I have in my ability to like do things is because I've successfully done them before.
Yeah.
So like obviously I doubted myself before maybe going to my first major championship and was doing a mix zone for 13 days and I didn't know what that was going to be like, and I doubted myself ahead of time. But then again, I'm also of the belief of like, okay, well, if my bosses don't doubt me and they like put me in those positions, they wouldn't send me if they didn't think I could do it. So that always helps. But then the next year I was like, we got this, easy breezy, beautiful. Like, so we're good to go.
Experience.
I think experience is probably where my lack of doubt comes from.
Yeah. There's also like a psychological component, I think, with if you are doubting yourself, you're probably way more likely to actually fail at something. And maybe that knowledge would help you
shift your brain,
shift it a little bit.
And then when I think it comes to personal, oh my God, like I feel like we just like doubt ourselves all the time when it comes to like decision making and this and that, like, well, you should go with your gut or this or that. Like, there's just so much information out there almost now that it's like, it can cause self-doubt, I think.
Well, okay, yeah. I like, if you're like waiting before making a decision or going and doing something, it's like, I would say probably maybe the most practical piece of advice is like, do something else that's going to keep you busy. Do some dishes, do clean up your room, do something that's going to keep your mind off of that. Because if you're leading up to something, just spinning the wheels in your head, doubting yourself, it's not doing anyone any good.
The doubting yourself, I think, kind of goes hand in hand with like anxiety a little bit for me. So like, and I think it's probably the reason I'm actually like, quote unquote, chill-ish right now. And it's this idea that, why worry about something twice? Like, why? What's the point in me stressing and getting anxious about something that might happen? Because when the thing does happen, if it's like the bad thing does happen, yeah, then I already have to go through the shitty time then. Why would I put myself through it twice?
Ah, right. Okay.
Right. And then if it doesn't happen, then I've just put myself through stress and a potential heart attack at 27 years old for no reason.
Yeah.
Which is like, that was stupid. So I've really shifted my brain when thinking about that, when I'm like getting really like riled up about things. And I think doubt probably has to play a role in that. Like,
absolutely.
Doubting that's a yourself good point. With it. So I think they're kind of parallel and they live in the same parts of your brain and like their little like things on your shoulder.
Cole's notes, live in the moment and trust yourself a little bit.
I sound so hippy dippy that way, but it's the truth. But I just think not doubting yourself comes from experience in whatever areas, whether it's emotional intelligence, whether it's career or anything like that. So if you're asking this and you're 21 years old, trust me, it will get better. If you're asking this and you're 41, it'll get better.
Yeah. So. And if you like, if you have a very specific instance that you need a little hype up for, write us and we'll hype you up. We'll record a little video for you next week that just hypes you up for what you need.
Forget about it. Our next question, which Jacob, I'm very curious to know your answer for this. They want to know all about reading goals. What are the reading goals of 2024? What is on the TBR to be read?
Oh, yeah.
And what are you most excited to read this year?
Okay. As everyone knows, I have a ton of books that are like on cracked TBR. Open on my TBR that I've read maybe like the first half of.
So a lot of DNFs.
However, I do have, as of a few days ago, a new reading goal for 2024. So this is an apt question here. I read a ton, almost exclusively nonfiction. I want to read
fiction. Come to the fun side. Hells yeah.
I don't read any fiction. I never started.
I'm trying to like get into that.
Well, maybe we should trade some recommendations, because I think like one of the things that sometimes gets me hung up on finishing a book is if it's nonfiction and it's like, you know, short essays or like bits of research that are in a study of some kind, which I read a lot of. You can kind of read it in chunks and
it's kind of like a choose your own adventure that
exactly,
way.
Exactly. But like the adventure is never chosen to finish the book, unfortunately. Where I think like if you're reading fiction and there is a complete story that you're going to get through.
It'd be like you getting like halfway through a movie and going, I've seen enough.
Right. Exactly. So I think that I'm like, okay, as a goal to actually finish a full book in 2024, I think that might help me do it.
Would you read the ACOTAR series? And review it, and then do TikTok the whole reaction series? Reviews.
That's a long. That's a lot. That's like thousands and thousands of pages.
We'll start in baby steps.
So if anyone has any recommendations for me, let me know.
I really like that goal for you. So last year, it's no surprise because I bitched about it on this podcast every single week. I was in the biggest reading slump I'd ever been. And since I started, for context, I was not a reader growing up. I was like, I read The Fault in Our Stars when it came out and sobbed in my bedroom. That's probably like one of the only books I read in high school, along with maybe a couple of Nicholas Sparks books, but I wasn't a reader.
That's surprising.
You know this? I was not a reader. My sister was. I was never the reader. And but I read like Nicholas Sparks here and there, like little things like that, like The Last Song and all that. And then university came and I resented reading because obviously you're reading all the time for school. And I think what did me in was my very first elective was an English class, which was popular culture in English. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then they were making you read one book a week.
Too many books.
It was like Harry Potter and shit. And like, she's given me like a random, like the fifth book in Harry Potter. And I'm like, I can't read that in a week.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And I'm actually a very fast reader. So that was a Coles Notes class for me, or Spark Notes, whatever it was. But it really deteriorated me from reading. So I was like, no way. Like, I have to read for school. I'm not interested in it.
There was no pleasure in that reading.
And it took not even 2020 in the pandemic. It took until 2021. If everyone remembers, in Toronto, we were open for a couple of weeks. And then they shut us down again into a full lockdown. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I went to the bookstore and I bought three books. I was like, three random romance books. I didn't have any like book talk recommendations, nothing. I just bought them because they said to be made into a movie. I go, that must mean it's good. And I read them in a week, all three of them. And I was like, okay. Started making content about it. And then I just like continued reading. So 2021, 2022 were big book years for me, like reading wise. I was reading like 50 plus books a year. Last year I read like 15, which like sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot.
But in comparison, not a lot.
Like,
that's a slump.
Just over one book a month. And to be honest, the only reason I hit 15 is because I read the ACTAR series in 2 weeks.
Right.
So I was in a huge slump. This year, we're going no slumps. No slumps. We're going to power through.
How many have you gone through this year? What have you started?
I'm on book number 3 for the year right now.
Okay. Book a week.
Yeah. This one, though, has kind of put me into a slump. It's fine. We're going to get through it. It's like short, anything shorter than ACOTAR. So now in my brain, I'm like, I can read a 350 page book like in a couple days.
Do you always finish? Or do you like, would you pull a me and you're like, this is not something I'm going to finish?
I have, last year I DNF'd, it was the most I've ever DNF'd, I DNF'd 4 books.
Wow. I guess you read a lot though. You kind of have to, I know there are a ton of books out there.
But I read a lot. So this is the thing, I didn't used to DNF, but now I think I DNF more because I know which writing style I like versus I don't. So if I'm not into it, I'm like, I'm not ever going to be into it. And I don't want to put myself back into a slump. But anyways, this year's goal, I didn't make it 50 because I was like, I can't go from like a slump here to not. So I made it 30 because I think I can hit 30. That's just over 2.5 books a month, I guess.
Easy.
And I think about things that I have coming up, like something like the Olympics, where I'm going to be on my phone every single day. I'm going to want to read at the end. Like when I'm on work trips, I read a lot because I read at the end of each night to like turn my brain off. I think I'll be better, and if I can keep up the pace that I'm on right now, I just need a couple good series to hook me in.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna start. One of the other questions was something I'm excited to start. I'm gonna go. So Sarah J. Maas, who wrote A Court of Thorns and Roses series, she has two other series, Throne of Glass series. My sister's reading it right now, and so she gave me the first book.
Multiple books in each.
10 books in this one.
Oh. Okay.
And they're all like 600 pages. The last book is 1,000 pages. So. That will help
a lot to get through, but it'll get you up your numbers a bit. That's a third of
my goal.
Easy.
So we're going for 30 this year. Other books I'm really excited for. Emily Henry is my favorite author ever, and she has a new book coming out this year. And then also Carly Fortune, who's a Canadian author. She is one that's set on PEI.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, so it's like set in Charlestown and has Anne of Green Gables references in it, apparently.
Speaking of how you got into reading in the first place, are there any books right now that are on their way to be made into movies that you're excited about?
Oh, to come out. Well, I mean, A Court of Thorns and Roses is going to be a limited series, apparently, on Hulu. Or like a series, not limited, but like a TV series. Books to movies that are coming out. I don't know. None that are coming out that are like I'm super stoked about yet. I'm very curious to see how this Justin Baldoni, Blake Lively, It Ends With Us ends up, because everyone keeps roasting it on TikTok about how they're dressed and all that. Look, I don't love Colleen Hoover, so like I don't even love that story anyways, but I'm very curious to see how it comes. Like, I don't know. I'm just very curious. So yeah, there's nothing really that's a great question. I'm going to have to do another deep dive because I did a TikTok video about popular books that became movies or TV shows that people might not realize. So maybe I'll have to do some research and do another one of those.
Last question of voicemail, Sarah. What are your thoughts on TV show reboots? Is there a show you'd love to see rebooted? And this is a hot topic right now because Wizards of Waverly Place is being rebooted, which is news to me. I didn't know that.
But also it's like with Selena Gomez and with David Henry, who have signed on for it. So that was going to be my take. Is like, I think reboots work when you're working with the original cast. Things like...
Well, they also reference Lizzie McGuire.
What? Is Lizzie McGuire being... Oh, yeah, because Lizzie McGuire was supposed to be rebooted, but then Disney pulled the plug because they didn't like that Lizzie grew up and wasn't 14 years old anymore.
But okay, original cast.
I think original cast has to be involved in some capacity. Like, Fuller House was a great example of that. Look, the show was cheesy as hell. It wasn't good. But I still watched it because Full House was my favorite show when I was growing up. But I thought it was good because although not the whole original cast was part of it, the core sisters were, and they passed on the torch. I think Boy Meets World did the similar thing when they did Girl Meets World. Like,
oh yeah,
there's like ways to do it. I think they also had like Raven's Home was another one that.
Okay,
they did
well, what
the
about
the
How I Met Your Mother that they also kind of rebooted? Speaking of Lizzie McGuire,
so that's
Hillary
another
Duff.
One. I watched that show. I did watch it because I kind of really didn't have anything else to watch, and I love Hillary Duff, so I watched it. But I thought that one was kind of a flop because it had nothing to do with the original cast. Mm-hmm. It was just like a totally separate story, totally different people. So I think like you weren't nailing the nostalgia factor that you need to. So it was just a bad sitcom as opposed right. to like if you're
a
hitting
fresh
on,
idea,
even if it's a bad sitcom, but you're hitting on the nostalgia of it, then it will last longer. So that one I think was kind of a miss because of that. But I'm excited for Wizards. Okay. So like another example is like Frasier, like when they, they're not calling, it's not a reboot. It's not like, it's like a new season of it, which I think is a unique way to do it as well, because they used to have like members of the original cast. It's still like a new story with like his son being a main character and all of that, but
there's
it's
a familiar entry point kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. So then that way I think it makes the entry point easier for like younger people like me to, who watched it maybe like growing up with my
but
dad,
still
but then
approachable
my dad could
for,
still watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then it feels more familiar that way as opposed to a completely new cast and just using like, I don't know, like on How I Met Your Father, there's the reboot. Mm-hmm. Like Barney makes one appearance and like whatever, like they just make like these bit appearances that like, I it's fine, but I don't think you're leaning into nostalgia properly. So that's why I get excited when they're doing a reboot or a new season of a show in a way that's not recreating what the old show was, but adding on to the storyline, which I really hope that's what Wizards of Waverly Place is going to do. Lizzie McGuire tried to do it, and it's really disappointing that they canceled it because it was going to be like Lizzie as an adult. Like they're not like trying to recreate Lizzie McGuire. They're just trying to like show what happened, I guess, after the credits rolled.
Have there been any misses? Something, what was referenced recently? Was there a, what am I thinking of? Ed West, whatever. What's that show called? Gossip Girl. Was there a Gossip Girl?
Oh,
one?
There was, like, there was a Gossip, example, Gossip Girl.
Right.
Only got, I think it got two seasons, got canceled. Again, like, there was no reference to the old show. And, like, everyone said, like, the reason they loved the old show was because it was just, like, they were all wealthy assholes. Like, that was the reason we watched it. Like, we didn't
love to hate them, kind
you
of.
You love to hate them, exactly. And they went totally the opposite way. I didn't watch it, but with the new Gossip Girl. So then you lost that. You didn't gain a new audience.
Okay,
it
there's
a show,
little bit of that. Would you
one.
Call Riverdale a little? Well, that's just like taking the property in a new direction.
Yeah, right? It's just, I wouldn't even, because it's not a reboot, right? It's just like, it's growing up with Archie comics. Obviously, it has nothing to do with the Archie comics.
Exactly. I was disappointed with that myself.
Was there one that you would want to see rebooted or something that you'd want to see like after the credits rolled? Like what happened? Like some sort of reboot?
This is a good question. It's tough because like some of my favorite shows are ones that I wouldn't want touched again. Or there are other examples, like there would be, you know, The Office is not necessarily a reboot, but there are those crossovers that it's like British version, American version, which I think like most of the time don't cross over well unless they're becoming their own thing.
And then I also think there's things that are special and like when it's in its own thing. Like I know everyone, I think of how many times like Warner Brothers has probably tried to pitch like a Friends like extra season, like, you know, like,
well, when, they did Joey.
No, I know they did Joey, but I mean like
Joey
now,
wasn't good.
But I'm saying like now, you know, there's a world where like Warner Brothers is like, come on, just do like a limited 6-episode thing. Like they probably offer all this money, but I think there's something special when you can just keep it in the sanctity,
or you go in a completely different direction and you have just like Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David.
That's
after
true.
Seinfeld.
That's true. But overall, there's nothing I'm like craving to get rebooted, but I am very curious to see what they do with Wizards, because I'm like, is it going to be targeted at 14-year-olds? Is it going to be targeted like at us?
What is the brother Cohen? In Wizards,
David
the
Henry.
Older brother?
It's David Henry. That's the actor's name. Justin? Justin.
Justin.
Right? That's right. Right? Justin.
Okay, true.
And then the little brother, I don't know what he's doing. I don't think he's
I haven't seen those faces in a long time. I don't think I'd recognize them.
Selena Gomez, you want to recognize her face? No, I'm excited for it. I think it'll be good. But with that, thank you so much to everybody that submitted a voicemail question. As always, we'll be doing this once a month. If you've made it this far, please rate the show 5 stars because we need some new ratings. We haven't really had ratings since last year. Please rate it 5 stars because if you made it this far, then clearly you like us enough to listen to us for an hour.
I would hope so. That's a 5-star performance.
That is a 5-star performance. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. We will see you next Wednesday. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.